Welcome to Talking Science, where science is not only a part of the title, but also an integral part of the show. I'm Boyang, your host for the next half an hour. Last week, we talked about the Hollow Earth theory, but I did not finish, and I forgot where I stopped. So I assume somewhere when I exhausted my active vocabulary. So instead of listening to the podcast and retracing my own words, something I would not even force on my worst enemies, I simply start a new topic, or more appropriately, continue an old one. I think the overarching theme, and I've decided that my show this semester has a theme, is human evolution, or more concretely, the diversity how the human, modern human sapiens, modern humans, Homo sapiens, evolved under the influence or under the introgression of genetic material from Neanderthals and Denisovans. But to understand, to put everything into a larger perspective, I think it's best I give an introduction into human evolution. Starting from the point when we diverged from the other primate or apes. So by the way, today's show is primarily based on the article in New Scientist by John Pickrell, called Introduction to Human Evolution from September 2006. Human evolution started about 6 million years ago when we split from our other ancestors. From the ancestors with which nowadays we would probably describe as apes, but obviously our ancestors are not the modern-day apes like chimpanzees or gorillas or orangutans. They are those apes are as modern as we are. Those ancestors do not exist anymore, or probably do not exist anymore. It's very hard to verify the non-existence of something. But anyway, so about 6 million years ago, we can find something in the geological record that we could regard as our own ancestors, and we find many features like bipedal walking, large brains, hairlessness in terms of, I think apparently we have as many hairs as chimpanzees, and we even have more, obviously very visible on our head, in our armpit, and between our legs. But on the rest of our bodies, our hair are very small and almost invisible, whereas in chimpanzees they are more expressed. So we are not really, we don't have less hair compared to chimpanzees, we just have, our hairs are not as strong as theirs. And also other features that we find in the records, fossil records, are tool making, that we probably hunted, and we learned to use fire. And of course there are other relatively more recent development like language, art, culture, or even what we would call civilization. So the first idea of human evolution, or that we are descendant of species of organisms that we nowadays would call apes, was first published or put forward by Darwin in The Origin of Species, something that I probably should read someday, although it is quite a thick book. But the first fossil was discovered actually 90 years ago in Africa, so 1924, when the so-called tongue child was dug up. It is a 3 to 4 million year old fossil of a species that now we call a Australopithecine, so a southern ape. And the tongue child, T-A-U-N-G, no idea how to pronounce that, so that was found in the Kalahari Desert, which, if I'm not wrong, is Kalahari Desert. It's in southern Africa, so covering much of Botswana and Namibia and South Africa. Its dry climate probably helped preserving much fossil. This town child, I think it was quite funny because when scientists found it, it was a singular specimen without anything else, and people wondered how it actually got there. So it was the only piece of the so-called Australopithecus africanus, and there's no evidence that that the child was killed by a leopard or any other predator. And apparently one of the funniest theory is, or one of the funnier theories, is that the child was killed by a bird of prey, and that it was dropped there into and that the skull, which was found, that it was dropped into that place. So that was the reason why it was so separated. Well, any funny story anyway, but the point is that we often think of science, especially if we underline it with numbers, of very exact and specific, but the truth is that sometimes it often requires a lot of fantasy and creativity in piecing together the theories that explains consistently the findings we have. And if it involves some kind of a giant eagle, well, maybe it is the case. Who knows? So that was the first discovery of something something that we might call a predator of a human species. And of course, in the last century, in the last 90 years, we have found many other fossils and things or specimens that we would put into our expanded human family, and somewhere between 12 and 19 different species of early humans are recognized, although there is no consensus on how those species are related and on whether they are actually species. Or sometimes you find you have different fossils found in different geographical locations, most of them in Africa, but also in, of course, in Europe. And sometimes they show the same morphological features, and of course you start to think, and also the dating put them into different eras or into different ages, and sometimes you wonder whether they are the same species, just spread over a large geographical region and over time, or whether there are two different species. And it is something that is hard, and without other evidence, maybe, I don't know, I'm not an archaeologist, and I do not want to make any assumptions about their discipline, but I guess from a very skeptic point of view, I guess to some degree, if you don't have many samples, if you only have, I don't know, 10 or 20 pieces of bones, and that probably is quite a large sample, and it is a very fortunate finding site if you find so many specimens at one place. Based on this, it is very hard to make any inference on the variety, intra-species variety, and without that, without any approximation, or without any knowledge about how much a species varies within their own within its own species. It is very hard to judge whether two different morphologically different findings are belong to the same species or not. But anyway, so the current scientific consensus puts the species or existing species or no the species that existed, human species or species of different human groups, between 12 and 20, but we don't know how they are related and whether they're how they're related. So the most famous fossil include a very remarkably complete Lucy, which was dug up in Ethiopia, which is in East Africa, Northeast Africa, and other quite astonishing findings are the hobbit species, which now are called Homo floresiensis, found on an Indonesian island in 2004. Indonesia, by the way, will be mentioned another time. Because not only is Indonesia or the Indonesia islands are home to those hobbits, which is, by the way, is a very fantastic PR trick that put those species into the global media. But Indonesia might also be the home of the last surviving Homo erectus. But that later. So humans, I mean, we are in many ways very singular and special, but biologically we are not that different from other apes, like the chimpanzees, bonobos, or gorillas. And we share about 98% of our DNA with chimpanzees, who are our closest living relatives. Apparently, we are so close that many scientists believe we should put the chimpanzees into the Homo genus. And currently, they are in the Pan genus. Or reversely, that instead of Homo sapiens, we might just be called Pan sapiens. Fossil evidence put our last shared common ancestor between 7 and 10 million years ago, which is also what genetic studies say. So, but even after we speciated as a human, we still interpret or hybridized with chimpanzees, or at least there are some. It is even possible that after splitting off, that we completely hybridized back and then diverged again. There are some genetic findings that support this theory. Maybe I'll talk about that next time. So around 6 million years ago, the first apes, or the first human ancestors, they walked on two legs. Or that appears in the, that's what the human records, the fossil records tells us. How do we know? Well, as I said, Lucy, the Australopithecus fossil found in Ethiopia, also she lived about 3 million years ago, but for example, the reconstruction of her gait, or her gait could be, for example, simulated. One way is to to have computer models of her fossil record, based on her fossil record, and then add some virtual muscles to her bones, which in itself is quite tricky because I guess the muscle structure, I mean, we don't have the full Lucy with us, so to add any virtual muscle to her bones, we have to get the raw data from either modern humans or chimpanzees, which itself is an approximation, and or at least based on some quite I would say speculative speculations on how Lucy looked like. And using some genetic algorithm, which means that we simply used different working algorithms and see which one works the best. And apparently the best locomotion that fits her bone and muscle structure is one that is quite similar to Earth, and that it is bipedal, although her gait was probably more bent than Earth's. Other evidence for bipedal motion would be, for example, fossils or traces of footprints. Anyway, so many of the earlier australopithecines of the southern apes, they were not much bigger than chimps, so the Lucy was 1.1 meters high, and they had a similar sized brains. This shift to bipedal motion was very significant, because not only is it the most important, or at least in the beginning, the most important difference between humans and apes, but it gave us our hands, which we can now are free to use tools. Why did we start working on two feet instead of on four? Possibly because of climate change, which in this case was quite fortunate to our evolution. So a hotter climate probably shrank the African forests, and which means that we have more kind of a savanna, and having a bipedal mode would allow us to walk upright and to look, so to stand up higher, taller, and to look farther away and spot predators earlier. It would also allow us to reach hanging fruit from the ground. And most importantly, it reduces our exposure to the sunlight. Lucy, by the way, is named after the Beatles song Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. The title itself can be conveniently abbreviated to LSD. One of the few instances where synthetic chemicals advanced or influenced science, or at least scientific naming. Apparently, hundreds of other fossils of the Australopithecus afarensis. Afarensis, Afra is, I believe, a region in Ethiopia. Have been discovered. Australopithecus afarensis related to the Australopithecus africanus, of which there's only one fossil, the town child, of which I talked about earlier, and then there are other species like, I don't know, the 3.5 million year old Kinianthropus platyops or the 4.5 million old Ardipithecus and some other species with very funny sounding names, I think. They're running out of Latin words, so they're using some, well, foreign words to name their species, and it might be hard to know the correct pronunciation. The thing about fossil findings that one of the important factors is the climate, or the climate at the location of the finding, and so mostly you find them at the very dry or cold places. The hotter and the humid a place is, the more likely it is that that any remains decomposes without any possibility of recovery. So the Australopithecines, they are most likely or ancestor of the Homo genus, the Homo group. They might also have given rise to another branch, kind of a parallel clade branch of a family tree, of a very, very extended family tree, the vegetarian Paranthropus, and we believe they have been vegetarian because of their jaw structure. They have muscles, chewing muscles for grinding up very tough roots and tubers. So probably vegetarians. They also gave rise to the Homo habilis. Homo habilis, they are about 2.4 billion years old. Very likely a direct ancestor of ours. I guess it's very hard to say because, as I said, we don't have any genetic material, or it's probably impossible to extract any genetic materials. It is very possible that our ancestors inhabited a region that had a very humid and warm climate, which encouraged decomposition so that nothing was left of them when they died. But of Homo habilis, we have quite some fossil records. And their bodies were around two-thirds the size of ours. And their brains were much larger, with a volume of about 600 milliliters or cubic centimeters. Apparently you don't measure your brain in liters, but in cubic centimeters. But well, 1 milliliter is 1 cubic centimeter, so that's how you translate the values. The Homo habilis had a much smaller teeth and jaws than the Paranthropus. Probably the first human to eat large quantities of meat. And that carnivorous diet might have provided the energy required to kickstart or increasing brain size. But again, that is just a theory. A very interesting theory about the growth of a brain size is actually that a mutation that caused the weakened jaw muscles may have given our brains more space to grow. So the theory says that about, I don't know, 2.4 million years ago, so at the time of the Homo habilis, that a mutation happened that controlled the protein in the jaw muscles, which led to smaller muscles. And the jaw muscles they also determine the bone structure, and the firmer the bite, the more bones we need to support to support the muscles, and the more restricted is our skull. So a more relaxed jaw muscle or weaker jaw muscles may have given our skull the opportunity to grow in size. Not to grow in size, but to give more room to the brains. Because other primates, like the chimpanzees, etc., they have very mighty muscles, chewing muscles, but that muscle squeezed the skull in a very vice-like grip, making it very hard to have a larger brain size. By the way, that is also why one of the reasons why we have wisdom teeth and wisdom teeth. Because our brain requires the space. More space, decreased the size or the size of a jaw, which means that we can't actually have all our teeth, or all our teeth grown out. So the wisdom teeth not only. They shouldn't be called wisdom teeth, not only because they come out when we are old and wise, but also because they actually made room for our brains. So the sacrifice of not appearing or gave our brain the room to grow. So, yes. So, apparently, those change in this mutation in the jaw muscle or in the chewing muscle happened only in humans, and probably apparently through by making different comparisons of different species. The genetic DNA of different species and based on fossil records, you can have some kind of a molecular clock dating the you can calculate a mutation rate, and using that you can have some kind of a molecular clock calculating or estimating the time of divergence or when the mutation happened. And yes, that made it about 2.4 million years ago. Anyway, the Homo habilis means the handyman, or someone who is apparently very dexterous. And it was the first human species to create and use tools, stone tools. And that is also the time of the start of the Stone Age. So the Stone Age lasted about from 2.5 million to about 10,000 years ago. It's quite a long time span compared to the other ages we have, like Bronze Age and Iron Age. But that's because we humans have a very long old record of using making stone tools. The first tradition is called the older one, based on a place in Tasania, I think. Older one, so it's a place where some fossils were found, and that's how this culture, if you may call that culture, probably this tool making tradition is called. And those older one tools are very crude, so they are made by just breaking angular rocks with kind of a hammer stone. So you have a stone, a heavier stone or a more solid stone, and you use that to hit another more porous stone that easily gives up on flakes. And so you have some kind of sharp-edged stone flakes that you can use for chopping and slicing.